All right, everyone ready?
Yeah. No.
Inshallah, everyone's ready.
Alchemy is an ancient practice associated with science, chemistry, physics, astronomy, astrology, art, symbology, metallurgy, medicine, and philosophical analysis. And despite that these sciences were not exercised in a scientific way as known today, alchemy is the origin of modern logic.
Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another episode of The Alchemy of Truth. This is your host, Nasser Al-Khatib, and with me are my two great co-hosts, Amr Sari. Assalamu alaikum, Amr.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you today, Nasser?
Alhamdulillah. Me and Amr are sharing a mic today, so you're going to hear a little pause when I talk to Amr. Isn't that right, Amr?
That's correct.
Yeah, don't make the pause longer than it has to be. All right, and my other co-host is Anna-Rose Zaid. Assalamu alaikum, Anna-Rose.
Wa alaikum assalam. I have a mic all to myself, so you'll hear most from me.
Yes, Anna-Rose is also British by birth, so you'll see that in the accent.
Okay.
Inshallah. So, over to you, Amr.
Is that the fact about Anna-Rose for the show?
Yes, okay. Me and Amr are next to each other, and you have a British accent.
Move on.
Yes, good evening, listeners. We're going to be talking tonight about an exciting conference that's coming up next Saturday at Lebanese Muslim Association is running. It's called Contextualizing Australian Muslim Summit. And it's about providing a platform for both Muslims and non-Muslims to get together and to tackle issues facing Muslims in society. There's a lot of great guests, and we've got one of the organisers here on the show, and her name is Sabrine Al-Khador.
Wow, seriously, man.
That was amazing.
You didn't practice the name at all.
Yeah, sorry. Well, anyway, over to Anna to tell
Anna
us
Rose.
More. Anna Rose to tell yep. us more about our guest.
All right, Sabrine is a pharmacist. She is also an activist and is involved in many causes in human rights and Islamic identity. She is currently the director of Muslims Without Borders and is one of the conference managers. Sabrine also makes her own lip gloss, and though I really want to interview her about that, instead we'll probably focus on the conference today. So hello, Sabrine.
Hi.
Assalamu alaikum.
How are you? Good, how are you?
I'm good. Now we'll jump straight in about the title, Contextualizing Australian Muslims, because that's a really interesting title. And what is being contextualized and how?
I think more the question shouldn't be what is being contextualized. I think the question is why are we contextualizing? And the answer to that really is that as Muslims living in Australia, we're in a very unique position. And more broadly speaking, as Western Muslims, we're facing very unique sets of challenges and issues that we need to deal with. And so the idea of having a summit like this is to think about these issues within the context of Australia, and given the parameters that we involved, and to be able to discuss those issues and come to a solution.
Very interesting. So it's contextualizing Muslims and Australia and the two of them together. Synergy, if you will.
Yes, yes.
Okay, brilliant. Now, the term contextualizing can sometimes be used by Muslims to apologize for Muslims, or like to assure a non-Muslim media that Muslims are westernized and therefore not frightening or dangerous. So in these cases, the issue can be when Muslims buy into this false representation of Islam and Muslims. In other words, they can be saying, yes, Muslims are nasty and terrorists and everything, but we're different because we've become westernized. So how do you plan on avoiding falling into this trap?
I think it's quite unfortunate that as a Muslim community, we tend to find attempts at altering the status quo to be, we're quite suspicious of that. And I guess the idea of contextualizing really is about looking at these issues and trying to say that we want to be pragmatic about these issues rather than allowing external forces to be solving those issues for us. So it's not about pacifying, you know, the West or pacifying Western powers. It's about saying, look, these are our issues and we want to own these issues and solve them for ourselves.
It seems like a conference that's been a while in the making. How long has it taken you guys to put the conference together?
We've actually been talking about it for several months now. And it's mainly been over the last 3 months or so that we've looked into getting all our speakers on board and organising the conference to be running.
Tell us a little bit about your speakers, because they seem to come from all sort of directions. It doesn't really give a clear idea about which direction the conference is going towards.
And that's the point. We're not trying to go in a particular direction. The reason we chose the speakers that we chose is that they're either academics or leaders in their field. So they don't have particular agendas or particular views on issues, but rather they have something that they can contribute to this conference, and that is a conference of ideas. They can contribute those ideas that we can discuss as a community, and ideas that we can take further and develop potentially into solutions and into a vision for the community.
So what kind of things specifically, if there's anything you can reveal in advance, do you think you'd like to see discussed in a, you know, open, transparent sort of way?
The issues are out there for everyone to see. The issues that we're really discussing and that we felt are critical for the future of our community are issues such as media, issues like political engagement, issues such as capacity building, and looking at building institutions and building the framework for the Muslim community to advance within an Australian context. And those are really critical issues that we need to discuss, because they form the framework for our community to be able to move forward.
Now, Islam transcends culture as a religion, so it's relevant to and can be applied to the everyday life of all humans around the world. So if Islam is already sensitive to context, why is such a conference needed? You know, like, I guess really aggressive way to put this, why have Australians, Muslims, failed to let their Islam transcend their culture?
I think going back to what I was saying before, that as a community, we tend to really shy away from anything that's outside of our comfort zone, and we don't like to step out of that comfort that we get used to. So anything that challenges our assumptions and challenges what we're used to and what we've faced for such, looking at things in a new way, is not something that we're accustomed to. So although Islam in itself is dynamic and has been created as a solution for all of mankind and for all time, I think we tend to forget that and go back to that status quo and not think about the fact that we need to apply our faith within the context that we find ourselves in. And I mean, that's been happening throughout the centuries of Islam. You know, jurisprudence and Islamic law has developed over time in response to the context.
It's very interesting that you say this, because history shows that since, I think, the British colonization of India, that there's always been these two opinions. The first opinion says that basically we have to incorporate new, methodologies of learning, for example, of delivering information. And the opposing opinion saying that Islam doesn't need that, that everything can come forth from Islam. So this is the same problem, remember, Anaraz, that we had with feminism in our shows before, that some people are saying, you know, feminism gives women her rights, and some Muslims would say that Islam gives women her rights. You don't need an alien or a foreign structure to be inserted into Islam.
A theory.
Or a theory, exactly. So what are your thoughts on this, Sabreen? I mean, do you think, obviously you don't think that Islam can stand on its own and that it needs some sort of foreign structure, or do you have a different take on this?
No, what I'm trying to say is that if we look at the development of Islam over the centuries, it was never considered in a vacuum. It was always considered within a particular context. So whatever community or country that Islam moved into, it basically developed and evolved in response to that context. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that in terms of contextualization, what we really need to look at is marrying our social realities with an understanding of the texts and the basic values and underlying objectives of Sharia. And I think ultimately that's really what we're trying to get to, what we need to get to as a community.
As Muslims living here, we've no doubt heard of many people claiming to be progressive Muslims. And from that, we understand that Muslims who are, you know, in my understanding, clearly progressives in that they're trying to go back to the original understanding of what Islam means, rather than just sticking to
cultural
outdated
interpretations.
Yeah, Exactly. And then you have people who are progressive Muslims in the fact that they, for example, drink or, for example, you know, engage in other, you know, things that are clearly haram and clearly not part of Islam. So where do you find your threshold? I mean, what is too much and what is too little?
I think the latter is definitely something that has hijacked the meaning of progression, and it's really quite sad because when we talk about progressive Islam, unfortunately people get this image in their head that being progressive is all about, like you said, you know, becoming secularized and becoming all, you know, yes, we can drink and we can do this and we can have that and whatnot. Progressing is not about that. I think what you mentioned before that, which was, you know, it's about going back to the original understanding of Islam and trying to bring that forth and applying that to our current situation is really what progressive Islam is about. And in reality, that's what we need to get back to in order to progress and evolve as a community.
I just wanted to know, like, some people associate multiculturalism with great food. Yep. How do you define it?
Good kebabs. Totally.
Oh, really?
No, look, I mean, multiculturalism is about respect, and it's about having that respect for pluralism and different understandings and different cultures. But I think further to that, it's also about having respect for different ideas and ideologies and views. And, you know, even in this apparently wonderfully multicultural country, we still find intolerance, and we still find people who don't accept others. And I don't think that's necessarily restricted to the wider Australian community. I think we can find that even within our own community, where there is that intolerance between various cultures and communities. And that's quite unfortunate, because Islam is it's all about bringing people together regardless of their culture, and religion should transcend culture.
So more integration on both sides of the fence.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, right now, the trial of Anders Breivik is happening in Norway. Mm. Now, Anders Breivik says in his 1,000-page manifesto, of which I've read one page, that...
One page more than us?
Yeah, well...
You weirdo.
Well, was it translated? I mean, I didn't read it in Swedish.
Get on that,
Were you stuck on the train or something?
No, it's very interesting. You should read what he says. It's very interesting. He basically talks about multiculturalism. And he even gives it a denigrating name, multiculti, that he keeps mentioning all the time. Those people who have decided to completely, in Europe, completely disown their cultural heritage and accept everyone, including, of course, the Muslims. And so that's why he went and killed those 70 people, 77 people. He actually, I think, meant to destroy everybody on that island, because they were the new phase of multiculturalism that was going to allow Muslims to embed themselves into the culture and basically change everything. How do you think that translates into here? Are there similar torrents here of distrust of multiculturalism, of fear of failure of multiculturalism?
I think, I mean, there are definitely going to be people out there who will believe that, and they will believe that, you know, multiculturalism has failed, or that it's creating more harm than good. But I wouldn't say it's as widespread in Australia as it is in Europe. And it's from my own experience, I feel that Australians generally are a lot more accepting.
Yeah, I agree.
Than they are in many other parts of the world. And for that, we're really lucky. And I think that's something that we should be trying to build on, rather than trying to isolate ourselves.
Yeah. It becomes very interesting too when multiculturalism doesn't just apply to a group of people but to a person themselves, such as second generation Muslims who are genuinely culturally, say, I don't know, Arab or Indonesian or something, but then genuinely culturally Australian as well, and trying to balance within themselves multiculturalism and competing ideas. And it's a very interesting area, I think. So do you kind of go into this sort of, you know, competing cultures or that kind of thing for second generation Muslims?
Do you mean for the conference or generally?
Conference or generally.
Generally. I mean, it's something that we've all experienced. And as you said, as second generation Australians, we do find that we are competing, or we find that we have to compromise between our traditional cultural heritage and what we're expected to be as Australians. But I mean, I guess even that's up for debate as well, the concept of, you know, what makes you Australian, what is Australian. So I think we might have evolved a bit from that, because I don't see it as much as it may have occurred in the past. I think we've sort of achieved a certain level of a balance between the two. Yeah. But again, I guess that depends on who you're speaking to and what part of the community you're relating to. So,
okay.
I just wanted to ask you, you seem like very well spoken in terms of direction that the community should
well
be
spoken.
Well spoken.
Well, what do you mean for a lad, well spoken?
Well spoken for, you know.
I take offence
to
that.
Very young, very well spoken. And I just wanted to know how you feel into this kind of the community-based projects and stuff.
I'll actually tell you a little story. During my HSC, I got a little bored of studying. And in the final week, right before my chemistry exam, I decided to go and volunteer at the LMA. Mm-hmm. And
anything but study.
Procrastination all the way. That was actually my initiation into the Muslim community, so to speak. Before that, I was working a lot with Amnesty International as well.
Oh, really? Throughout school. I know someone that works at Amnesty International.
Really?
Her name's Anna Rose.
Oh, really? Great. Nice to meet you.
I never speak about it ever, like every single conversation, for example.
So that was my
So that's how you stumbled upon it, just through the, just getting away from the books?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Turned out to be quite productive. Productive procrastination.
And how long ago were we talking about?
A long time now, 7 years.
Wow, 7 years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about this young leadership program? They have a young leadership program that's actually putting this conference together. So
the leadership, the Sharing Humanity Leaders Young Leaders Program, is it's a program that was funded through the Attorney General's Department, which the LMA received earlier in the year. And basically through that program, the idea is to train up. We've got about 20 young leaders in our group, and they're being basically trained to be able to take on leadership positions. And so within the group, I mean, we've been assigned the conference, so we're looking after the conference. There are several other projects that are being done that will be launched at the conference as well.
Okay, so attendees can expect some surprises about the future direction.
Yep, definitely.
Now, it seems as though all the speakers, or most of the speakers, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but that all the speakers may have similar views on things like, say, democracy and engaging in Australian society. But not all Muslims and not all Muslim leaders in Australia necessarily agree on these topics. So considering this summit is a debate, will we see a plurality of views and opinions?
Just to clarify, we didn't actually choose the speakers based on what their perceived opinions would be. They were, as I mentioned before, they were actually chosen based on the fact that they were either leaders in their field or they'd performed some sort of academic research on the area. And I think that's really important to be able to give such people the platform to be able to discuss their findings and what their views are for the future of our community. In saying that, there will be opportunities within the throughout the summit after each speaker. There will be an open mic for people to just stand up and basically, you know, respond to the speaker and give their own opinions and their own views. And there's also going to be a Q&A panel towards the end of the summit as well, where you can talk to all the speakers for about an hour or so.
HT's time to shine.
Be listening.
I just wanted to... to talk about the common challenges that, you know, as Muslims in Australia that we face. And,
Are you speaking to the mic, man?
Yeah, I'm speaking to the
mic. Because I'm looking at the recording. See your voice?
Oh, really?
Nobody
okay. Before, you know, my voice is too loud. Now it's too low. It's hard to strike
that. Oh, they're cute. They're like an old married couple.
Yeah. Hard to strike this balance here with Norse.
We're contextualizing.
No, it's all about contextualizing. We should go to this conference and we'll learn how to...
Right, that's a question, I think.
What are some of the common challenges that you've heard of and that you'll be addressing?
I don't even think I need to talk about the challenges. We face them every day. Things sure. such as, you know, discrimination.
We all love a moan fest. Come on, talk about something.
Why not? Let's go. discrimination in employment. I mean, that's a pretty big one. You know, Islamophobia, the fact that the media just absolutely loves us. You know, and to be honest, one of the big issues for me that I think we're really falling behind on is the fact that we lack good leadership. And this is something that we, you know, as a community, I think we've been discussing for a very long time, but we don't really have a central, I think, body that can lead us into the future.
Yep. It's very interesting how you're saying that we lack leadership. It would be great if an organization that's been around in Australia for the last 30 years would come up with an academic and Islamic, you know, management leadership course that would help the Muslim community. Someone like, I don't know, FAMSI, launching in February 2013.
Oh my God!
We're talking about the bailiff program.
Is it bailiff?
No,
what is
this
it?
Is immoral.
Oh, yes. Is it BAILP? Is it? Is that it?
They're literally just advertising their show.
No, we're not. Okay. This is very organic. All of this is organic.
Fantastic. It's like on Carl and Jackie O when they discuss an ad rather than the ad present itself.
Yeah, but this is not an ad because we're not getting paid for it.
Whatever, Kyle.
Okay. Oh, I just remembered. I'm also the head of marketing for it, so.
Oh, it's just remembered.
Right. Wow. Duty of disclosure.
Are you getting paid for this?
Thanks for sharing.
No, I wish I was paid.
He wish. But yeah, I agree, though. It is really interesting because when you say good leadership, I think it's really hard to find a good leader, especially for the Islamic community that needs... It needs to be so multifaceted, like, you know, good for the men, good for the women, good for the youth, good for, you know, first-generation migrants, second-generation, that kind of thing. You know, like, are they appealing to the academics among us or the, you know, more vocational-based career path people? And do you mean more like an imam or, like, it's so vague a concept, basically, of what... Like, what would be the model good leadership in the Islamic community, do you think?
For me, I would see a good leader for the Muslim community as being someone that can instill vision into our community. So someone that will be able to at least paint a picture of where we want to be in 20, 30 years' time and actually make active attempts at working towards that. And we don't really see that now. We're very reactive rather than proactive. And I think that's a huge problem that we really, really, really need to work on in order to really move forward.
I think a lot of our listeners as well would strongly agree with that point. Just the fact that whenever something like this happens, I mean, if it's anything to do with a guy breaking a chair or, you know, a guy killing his wife or something like that, whatever it is, there's always a very strongly reactive an immature reaction, I mean, from the community, from the leadership of the community. It makes us look really bad. And when we're out there trying to present ourselves properly, when we weigh every word that comes out of our mouths and every color of hijab that we wear, the women of us anyway, you know, if something like that happens, then we basically, you know, lose all of our credibility. So it's very difficult. So inshallah, it's going to be very good starting this conference. Tell us a little bit about the conference itself in terms of short-term and long-term. So do you have any long-term plans for the conference as well, or is it just sort of a one-off like every other conference over the last 30 years?
Definitely not one-off, no. The immediate plan is we want our delegates to come out of it feeling somewhat empowered, or at least feeling as though they've started that conversation to get somewhere. And I think really that's where everything starts. That's where change starts. It's about bouncing ideas off each other and discussing ways of moving forward with an open mind. And I think that's really, really important point to make, because you need that open mind in order to move forward.
I guess the best way to describe it would be like throwing a little stone in a pond and it causes like the ripple effect.
Yeah.
And generally it gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that would be a good aim.
So we're throwing the first stone.
The thing that interests me, and this is going to be really pessimistic though, is I feel in the Islamic community there is so much emphasis on leadership, especially among young people, and conferences and programs and workshops and all this kind of thing, all geared to young Muslims, trying to make them, you know, the leaders and future leaders. And this kind of thing. So how do you think this conference will be different to other things that are out there? Or if it's not, do you not necessarily think it needs to be different? Or, yeah.
I don't necessarily think that the emphasis on the leadership development is the problem. In fact, I would say there isn't enough of that happening. I think the problem is when those that training is not translated into reality. I think what's happening, and this is what I'm seeing quite a lot of, is that a lot of young Muslims who have the potential to be going on to actually lead our community into a much brighter future are becoming disillusioned with the way the community is being run. And I think until those forces change, until those factors are changed, that disillusionment is going to continue. And I think with the conference, my hope for the conference is that at the end of it, because of the caliber of the speakers and the types of ideas being discussed, and hopefully the follow-up, which will be, you know, a series of workshops, and we're planning to continue this summit as a regular conference, and expanding it as well, that through that we'll be able to at least start that ripple effect.
Yeah, that sounds great, inshallah. This is a very grand undertaking. I mean, you're putting a lot of stuff on your plate.
That's an understatement.
It is. anyways, if you had the chance to do it all over again, what would you do different? I mean, I know the conference hasn't started yet, but it's starting
well,
in 2 weeks.
Very good question. Started planning earlier, I'd say. Yeah, I think that would be the main thing.
Inshallah. But you guys got a very good crowd in terms of speakers. I mean, you've got Aftab Malik, who is the president of the United States.
He was, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Once upon a time.
Malik Obama.
Just before George Bush, I think.
He was the head of the Zaytuna Institute in London, is that right?
Yeah, the former CEO of the Zaytuna Institute.
Yeah, so the former
in London?
In London.
It's the US, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was US.
Sorry, I thought I got confused with the Zaytunas. So he was the former CEO of the Zaytuna Institute. Are you guys still having the Q&A session?
Yes, we are still having the Q&A session, and that will be a panel with everybody for an hour, so you can pick their brains.
Oh, mashallah. Okay, that's great. Okay, so the Q&A session, that's great as well. So the conference is just going to be on the Saturday, isn't it?
Yes, it's just on the Saturday.
Is there going to be any follow-up at all on the Sunday, or is that just...
There's going to be the Open Mosque Day on Sunday,
yeah.
And that's just the regular yearly annual... tautology. That's the annual mosque that we have at Lakemba Mosque, and that will be the following day on Sunday, the 1st of July.
And for our listeners, the conference kicks off at 9 o'clock at the LMA at 7175 Wenji Road. You can find details on the Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Contextualizing Australian Muslim Summit 2012, or email at conference at lma.org.au. So that's 9 to 5 next Saturday.
Sabreen, thank you so much for being interviewed today.
Sorry.
On Alchemy of Truth.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, just one more thing. It says underneath here LMA office, right? And the LMA is capitals and the office is capital as well. If you look at it, it'll say LMAO. So I might want to check on that. It's not very relevant.
Oh, which girl. Thank you.
So, thank
and
you
on
very
that
much.
Horrible note,
yeah.
Moving on.
Inshallah.
Thank you for being part of our show, Sabreen.
Thanks for having
let's
me.
Let's get back to that.
So we'll stop with a little break, a nasheed suggested by one of our listeners. It is The Narcissist featuring Shadia Mansour. The song is called Alhamdulillah. Bismillah, like the feeling when I miss Falah and wish to go.
And we're back!
Yeah, okay, relax, man. Okay, so that was the song. It's a very good, beautiful song. And that was requested by our mortal enemy, Miran Husni, from the Y Factor.
So, is she even listening?
I don't know. Yeah, she is. Yeah.
This is for you, Miran. This is for you.
She's been commenting the whole show.
The guilt factor.
Well, commented twice. That's the whole show.
The whole show.
Inshallah. So we just had...
Sabreen
Khalil with us, who was our guest and who was organizing, one of the organizers for the CAMS 2012 conference, which inshallah will be a great success, inshallah going to lead to a lot of great things. The guests are great. Read us the guests there, Amr.
Well, I just happened to have the list handy right in front of me.
What a coincidence.
It's Aftab Malik, Dr. Nasra Bafi.
Okay. Oh my god.
Good. That's
even
ridiculous.
I can read better than that. I'm okay. An Arab.
So we've got Aftab Malik, we've got Dr. Nasha Baffin, and she is a lecturer at UTS.
What does she lecture?
Sorry?
What does she lecture?
I think media. Pretty sure. Because she also works for...
something like that.
ABC or something like that. Yeah. She used to be my president.
You're just making things up, aren't
you? No. She used to be... actually, no. I asked her to be president. She never was. Oh, she was the secretary of the Islamic Society of Deakin University at some point. Peter Gould, who is the Peter Gould. We all know Peter Gould.
I don't.
Peter Gould is the artist.
Peter Gould, he is a artist who does a lot of design stuff.
A lot of art.
He does a lot of collateral for like Zaytuna Institute and stuff like that. So he's very creative and...
Is he a convert?
Yes.
One
you could have
us.
Guessed from Peter Gould.
One
yes.
of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's one of you. That's right. Yes, Anna Rose is not born Muslim. Oh, she's
Anna Rose fact number two.
Yeah, okay. She's a reverse, so she's always one
of you literally bring this up every single show, and every time you say it as though you have never said it before.
Hold on a second. You said Peter Gould is one of us.
Yeah.
You started. Anyways, we're
people
about
knew.
To, yeah. Shaban Omran, who is working with... what was he working with? Talal Yassin at Crescent Wealth, which is a great initiative for Muslim investment or Islamic investment in this part of the world. Ansari Zainul Abidin, who is going to be talking to us about... what is it again? Asset management? Asset building?
Oh, yeah. Asset.
Asset building.
Building.
Yeah, which is basically using the community strengths to
don't
its
don't worry,
potential.
People. It's not banking.
Jamila Hussain, who is a lecturer of Islamic law at UTS. And she's a great lecturer. She's a great
and
thinker.
And infidel law, too, I think.
Infidel law, too? Yeah. Oh, yes. So she's a lawyer of infidel and Islamic law. Mm. Hisham Zureika. I don't know who Hisham Zureika is.
No.
No?
Awkward. I'm sure they're very, very important. Yeah.
Awesome guy.
Very influential.
And Amal Awad, who is the writer of the book
Courting Samira.
Courting Samira, who all
three
of us.
Coincidentally.
Yes, all three of us are reading her book because we're going to interview her next week.
And I will have heaps of fun as the girl, and the other two will be incredibly awkward. So that's one to listen to. Yes. It'll be like fashion show all over again.
We will see who will out awkward who. And now we come to
do
the
end
of
do not offer to her to marry anyone like you do usually.
Okay. And now we come to the end of... Is she married?
Moving on.
Okay, anyway. And now we come to the end of our show. We would like to thank our guest, Sabrin Khodr, for coming in on the show and for answering all of our questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks also to my co-hosts, Amir Sari and Anna Rose Zayed. And also we have a special little guest here, Hamoudi. He is going to send us off. So, Hamoudi, would you like to say the send-off?
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Next week on The Alchemy of Truth will be another great episode.
MashaAllah, that's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to say. JazakAllah khairan. Thank you very much, Hamoudi. And now we do come to the end of our show with your host, Nasser Al-Khatib, wishing you a good night and a great weekend, inshaAllah. All the best to the Parramatta Eels. I think they're losing this week.
Toodle pip.
Go the Bulldogs.
And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.